Oh, after this, today, we'll do a Q&A, as we do every month when I'm here. So get your fellowship, and then come on back in, and let's see what we discuss about today. Today is a lovely day. I've just spent 10 days in the silence. It does not make me special, because lots of people do it. Not everybody can. I'm special that way. I had hair when I started. Anybody who's ever quit smoking knows what it feels like to go through that 10-day of silence. It's something. It is truly something. So I am thrilled to be here. I got to be here last year when I finished it. I've done it 7 times now. And it makes a difference. But last year I asked David if he would write a song. Those of you who know David Friedman, he does that. And he sang it. And this will be our meditation today, is this song. So take a breath. We're going in. I've been sitting for about 10 hours a day, so I'm going to take a seat because I'm used to it now.
Underneath the noise, underneath the bustle, there's a silence. If you listen, you can almost hear it. Underneath the rush, underneath the hustle, there's a quiet where it's safe and there's no need to fear it. There you might find joy, there you might feel pain. Memories and dreams may visit from your youth. But if you can be still, your search won't be in vain. For deep inside the silence, you will know the truth. God is in the silence. God is in your heart. God is ever present. If you're looking for God, the silence is a good place to start. Life's not what we have. Life's not what we do. Life's not what the outside world is seeing. Life goes on inside, and there we cannot hide from the fact that we are each a human being. In the silence, we are free from physicality, and we can always make the choice to go there. And in this world within, there's no more lose or win. There's just one simple truth we get to know there. God is in the silence. God is in your heart. God is ever present. If you're looking for God, the silence is a good place to start. So quiet your mind, settle in, make the choice. Be still, and you will find in the silence you can hear a still small voice saying, God is in the silence. God is in your heart. God is ever present. If you're looking, the silence is a good place to start. The silence is a good place to start. The silence.
And so it is. Amen. So there. That pretty. David Friedman. So last month, David and I were in Savannah, and we were fortunate enough to participate in the Savannah Voice Experience. And it's a lot of opera people, which is not a lot of what I do. It's not any of what I do, quite frankly. But a lot of the students were doing a concert of David Friedman songs. And so they had to go out of the opera head and go into the pop show tune head, and especially David's lyrics and melodies. And this next young man coming up here, he was part of the evening, and he was extraordinary. He was just on every level, working with him for the week, and then hearing him sing in rehearsals and in the show. And so I thought, he lives in New Jersey, so I thought, David, let's get him up to Unity. And this first song he's going to sing, David wrote for his show Desperate Measures. And it needs to be heard to experienced. So please welcome Eric Shebeck.
See that herd of birds riding through the blue? Can't you hear their words calling out to you? Life is short, they sing, still we rush and strive, for we know one thing, it's good to be alive. Cactus on the plain wrestle with the dust, panting for the rain just because they must. Still somehow they grow, still somehow they thrive. Could it be they know it's good to be alive? I'm not saying life is all sunshine and roses. Sometimes it's hard to live, but you must admit it's a bit more appealing than the alternative. See the coyotes bay in the desert night, shadowing their prey, lusting crawling tooth and claw, that's how they survive. They know but one law. It's good to be alive. It's good to be alive.
You guys are applauding on the note now. He'll be back. He will definitely be back. So, 10 days of silence to do Vipassana. Has anybody here ever done a 12-day Vipassana course? Lisa? Okay. And some people say, well, I've done three. I heard one person say, well, that 10 days just didn't fit in my schedule, so I did it at home. That is not doing a Vipassana course. It's like we had a friend who joined a 12-step fellowship, and she called later. They said, well, I've done the first four steps. I'm going to do the rest this weekend. I'm like, no, you have not joined the 12-step fellowship for healing and recovery. You have gone to high school and have an assignment. At Vipassana, the point, I have got to read it because I just know I'm a little fuzzy. And it's Vipassana, its meaning is to see things as they really are. And it's a form of Buddhist meditation. And it's quite ancient, Buddha, they've heard of him. And the point is to observe sensations in the body, to observe. Do any of you know how difficult it is to observe without an opinion? Observe doesn't say observe and judge. Observe just says observe. And when you're there, and there's 100 people, there's basically 50 men and 50 women there in a meditation hall. The women are kept over on their side and the men here. We never mix during the whole thing. But well, the men don't really mix because we never speak to each other. That first after evening, we'll call it, we all have a light meal. And then at 7:30, we go into silence. And we don't look at each other again. There's no gazing across the table. We don't hold doors for each other. There's no sly smiles. Now, I certainly did observe other people because I had time on my hands, but we didn't communicate, but we were all there having our own, I'll call it unique experience with being in the silence and doing a very specific type of meditation. And every time I have gone, it's been a very different experience. Like I said, the first time really felt like it had when I quit smoking. It was so hard because I had no idea what was going to come next. None at all. And the funny part is, oh, I should tell you, in this course, it's not strongly suggested. This is part of the agreement. There is no killing any living thing. Okay, I can do that. Yeah, there was a spider yesterday just before I left, and I let it alone. But, so, no killing, no sex, no reading, no writing, no praying, no music, no yoga, no strenuous exercise. You were there to do Vipassana. I suggest you look it up if you want to know more about it. I heard about this many years ago when we first moved to Connecticut. A friend of David's came over, and she'd stopped at the house, and David was telling me about it. She'd just come from the center up in Massachusetts, Shelburne Falls, not far from Carlos's house. And he told me about it, and all I heard was, no talking for 10 days, that's for me. I don't have to interact with people for 10 days. Nobody, I didn't know what Vipassana was. I certainly didn't understand it. And through that observation over and over and over again. And I thought, no praying. Well, what the heck? You know, the prayer is a way of living. It's not always a way of speaking. And I didn't need music, and I didn't need reading, and I didn't need writing for all those genius thoughts I would have. I got through the first time, just barely. My car is always parked right past this row of trees and stuff where you're not allowed to go. It says course boundary. But I have my clicker, and every day I'd walk by those trees and I'd go beep, beep. And I'd hear beep, beep, and I'd know, okay, I could still leave if I have to. Means my car still works. Very important. So I made it through, and then the next year I heard the voice that said, go back. And I thought, are you kidding me? Because I really thought, I will never do this again. And I heard the voice, so I went back. And it wasn't as hard. It really wasn't as difficult. And the fourth day is when you go into Vipassana. The first 3 days are, there's day zero, and then there's day 1, 2, 3 through Sunday, and you are they're just working with you right here and your nose here to the sensation of it all, just to breathe, to observe the sensations right here and right around here. Can you, you know, because they want you in tune enough that you can observe any sensation. Because we try to push down things. You know, we push down our itchiness. We push down a lot of things. And that first year, I thought I had it down. Because the point is to eradicate all craving, aversion, and ignorance. And what I discovered, sitting on the floor, I don't sit on the floor anymore, I have to use a chair. And they want you to do this. Sure, we'll give you a chair. So, but back then, I sat on a floor, on pillows and stools, and tried different things because it hurts. You sit on the floor for 11 hours a day, it hurts. And you know, you think you're down there, and you go, oh, my legs. So you adjust that. Oh, my butt. Oh, you adjust that. Oh, my back. Oh, my legs. And it's over and over again, and I'm trying to observe those and not hate them and not judge them. And everybody's doing it. You hear people squeaking around and doing things. But so what I finally got was, I have a great aversion to discomfort. Yeah. Anybody? Yeah. About that. And I have a great craving for comfort. And it is my ignorance that if I could just get comfortable, I wouldn't be uncomfortable. And therein lies one of the big issues. And so what it's taken me years of doing this to discover, oh, in the sensations, I don't like the, we'll call bad, I don't like that word, but you know, the uncomfortable ones. And so I create an aversion to it. But then I find a very pleasant sensation, like when it's hot and the fan hits you. Ah, that's great. But then you begin to crave that pleasant sensation. So you're still, like, you're still, the body is the boss. And your interpretation of what's going on is the boss, rather than your being. Your being with an itch, because let me tell you, it's, you know, when you start into Vipassana, it's like, start at the top of the head and observe here, and then you go around the skull and everything and observe here. Oh, there's an itch. Don't make anything, it's an itch. Because it's all going to change. It's all going to pass. Okay, great. Okay, oh, it does pass. Look at that. It came to pass. It can come to stay. And I'm coming down here, and I'm down on my chest, and there's an itch up here again, and I'm not supposed to be going back up there again because I'm focused here. And it's like, oh, finally, I scratch. You know, sometimes I just give in and scratch. What I had to learn is I'm not trying to reach nirvana. I'm just trying to not hate my life so much, you know, or hate an itch, or hate anything, or think there's something defective about me because I have an itch I can't bear to not scratch. But to observe it, you know, it's practice. It's practice. It's practice. And so through all this, and then you begin to... It begins to get a little easier. But that second year, I thought I had this down. I had the right pillows. I had a back jack. If you don't know, that's a chair that the seat sits on the floor and there's a back and it supports your back. You're allowed to do that. Ah, this is so nice. And so I had the right blanket. I am comfy. Oh, I forgot to tell you. That first year, I went to the teacher. You're allowed to schedule a 5-minute interview with the teacher. Because there's the main teacher, S.N. Goenka, on video. But then there's these two teachers, female and male, on a box the whole week. And they're sitting there cross-legged, man, boy, they had practiced. And I thought, I had this down. So I went to him, and I said, I think I understand this. I said, I have a great craving for comfort and aversion to discomfort, and it's my ignorance that thinks if I could just get comfortable, I won't be uncomfortable. And I said, what are you thinking? He said, I think you should keep doing Vipassana, Sean. And that was the end of my interview. We were not there for an intellectual discussion. We were there to learn Vipassana. And so what I know now is I rarely schedule an appointment with the teacher because I know the point. And I'm not here to try to get him into my ego to satisfy and assuage my egoic thinking. If I'm uncomfortable, it's because I have a story. It's because I haven't accepted things the way they are. And I be clear, I've talked about this so many times in Unity. Accepting what is doesn't mean I understand what is. And it doesn't mean I can describe what is. I can describe how it feels. But I cannot tell you what it is, because to tell you that would limit it. It's like to tell you what God is. We don't have time for that, because it would be infinite explanation. Same with love. I can't explain love. It feels this. I know what love feels like. I don't know what it is, but I trust that it is. And so last year, I got there. Second year, much easier, because I at least I knew what to expect within the schedule. I knew they would wake me up at 4 in the morning. I knew by 4:30 I was to be in meditation. I knew at 6:30 was breakfast. I knew at 8 o'clock was the first one-hour sit with everybody. And then I knew an hour and a half after 9 o'clock. And then I knew at 11 o'clock would be the last meal of the day, which horrifies a lot of people when you tell them that. And it's a beautiful vegetarian, simple buffet, very simple, but delicious. I ate things I would never order in a restaurant, but they're sure good up there. Although I gotta tell you, Mac and Cheese Day is my favorite. And then I knew at noon is free time. I knew at 1 o'clock is meditation time. I knew at 2:30 is another group sit. I knew at 6 o'clock is the last group sit of the day. I know at 7 o'clock is the discourse on video with Goenka, who is a very funny man. He's no longer with us. But so they have one teacher, so it doesn't get watered down by other people coming in and teaching this. It's like if we all taught a Myrtle Fillmore book, we'd all know Myrtle Fillmore in a different way. So the discourse is by Goenka, he became the head guy somehow. He's from Burma, and he loves this. He has a great passion for it. But then there's one last 15-minute sit, and 9 o'clock lights are out. And that, I know that. I know when I go there, that's going to be the schedule. So I'm comfortable now with that. But I never know what's going to come up in my mind. I never know what's going to come up in my experience. I never know what's going on around me because there's other people there. Funny thing now. Last year, some of the manners of some of these people, especially in the dining hall, it's like, really? Really? The guy who sat next to me last year, he slurped like nobody's business. That guy can slurp toast. It was shocking. Now, I was ready to go complain to management. Isn't that funny? And then I read a thing that said, pay no attention to your fellow meditators. Now, it's funny, but these things set me free. If there is no right to complain, they don't charge you for this. There is no fee to go. They want you living on charity while you're there. They put you up, they feed you, and the rooms are nice. You have your own bathroom. They feed you all week. At the end, they will accept a donation. They will accept an offering. And the purpose of the offering, take this in today when you're giving your offering, is so that others may come and take this course of healing. That's the reason to give, is because you want others to have this dharma, as they call it, this love, this healing. And so that's what it is. So you can't complain, well, I paid for this. No, you didn't pay for anything. You are here on charity today. And we want you to succeed. And last year, I finally discovered they're not there policing everything. They're not trying to catch me doing something wrong, which is a good thing. Then I went to my car, which you're not allowed to do, because I was beside myself knowing something awful was happening with David. Nothing awful was happening with David. But in my head, it was, so I had to call home. And you're not supposed to have your phone. But I keep my phone in my car, because if I have to leave at a moment's notice, I don't want to have to go finding them to unlock a box and try to talk me out of it. Beep, beep. Now let's get to the beep, beep. this year. Saturday a week ago, there was a tornado up there. And I didn't know if it was hitting the site, but I could hear a lot of wind. I could hear a storm outside, and nobody was doing anything. Nobody's running to the basement, so I thought, okay, I gotta trust these people. But after the storm was over, I went outside to go beep beep, and there was no beep beep. The electricity in my car died. I wasn't happy about that. I was distracted. And it was the greatest gift I could have received last week. Such a gift. So I went to the course man, because I went to my car and my key. And the last bit of electricity I got was that it unlocked the doors. Because otherwise you've got to take the whole handle apart to get a key that's somewhere in there to unlock this thing. And it's a plug-in hybrid, and it's work. It's lovely when it works, and it's hard when it doesn't. But I went to the course manager, and I said, this just happened. I said, I went to check, and nothing. And nobody said, why did you go to your car? I was glad about that. But I said, can we get this charged now so I don't have to worry the rest of the week? And he said, well, we'll do it next Sunday, meaning today. And I said, can't wait till Sunday because I'm speaking in New York on Sunday, and I need to be able to leave right away. And he said, well, then we'll do it Saturday. Okay, so here comes my theme for the whole week. And it started the first night, which was be here now. I heard it last year, and then I heard it again this year. Be here now. This is the most important part of today's message. Be here now. And the next part I heard was, now is not then, and here is not there. So every time I started to project catastrophe, every time I started to think the future, even an hour, be here now, Sean. That's then. That's not now. And that's over there. That's not here. And I could only have here, and I could only have now. And so with that car always weighing on my mind, I had to be here now. Because otherwise I would be suffering. Otherwise I would be in craving and aversion. And I was committed to staying at least till yesterday. I was committed. At a tough point, I thought they were going to have to commit me, but I showed up every day for all of the things because you're expected to. And you make a commitment to do that. A couple of days I got a hit. I bet there's electricity there today, and I go to my car where you're not supposed to go, and nothing. So I would, now I'll be honest with you, because that's best that I do that. I did keep my phone with me the whole week so that David could text me every morning and say, all is well here. Because I know my mind, and I just wasn't up to that crazy making. What did it hurt? Maybe I could have gone deeper to some other sort of thing if I hadn't done that, but I did. And I don't feel guilty about it. I am old enough now that, sorry, if I want guilt, I'm gonna have to go hunt for it. And so every day, and I'm thinking, okay, because when I would start to project, well, what if on Saturday he doesn't get somebody to jumpstart my car? Or what if he does and it still won't work? What if I have to have the car towed away? Whatever. But I did text David. The problem, he said, I'll come get you if necessary. It's 2.5-hour drive. And he said, I'll come get you. Well, I was taken care of in that. I got what I needed within my thinking. I am loved. I am supported. And I don't have to worry. So now worrying is a choice. Any worrying I'm doing is about them. It's certainly not about now. I had a very safe room. I had a nice bathroom. I was very safe. And so, and any time I started going over to there, past or future, oh, no, Sean, you're here, not there. And I kept now, yesterday morning, I'm planning to leave a day early. I know I was leaving. So before the 8 o'clock session, I want to take some of my stuff and put it in the car. And I peek out my door. Here come people down the hall. Come on, people, I got things to do. Because I don't want them to see me blatantly going against the rules. And even though it's none of their business, pay no attention to your fellow meditators. The first day when the power went out and I went to my car, I was in there and I saw another guy running down the hill and I saw him drive out with his car and drive back. So that was his business. And I could laugh about it. No, it wasn't mine. I just saw it and laughed. I was actually quite grateful. But that's when I thought, oh, nobody's policing me. Nobody wants me to fail. They just want me to succeed. So yesterday morning, finally, I had 6 minutes left to get to the first meditation and get my stuff to the car. And nobody come. I go down the hall. I'm on my way down this little path to where the cars are parked. And up the path comes this man I've never seen before. I call him my angel. He smiled at me, smiled back. I went and put my stuff in the car, and then I didn't see him. And I thought, oh, but I did see he had a truck with equipment in it. And I thought, I wonder if he has a charger. So I went up to the meditation, and there he is meditating on the floor. I thought, oh, okay. Well, I kept my eye on him the entire meditation. I never closed my eyes once during that meditation. I did the breathing, but I did as much as I could of observing. But I thought, oh, this is wonderful. Because, things were playing out too well. I couldn't plan for this. You know, what are the odds that I had to wait for like four different people to get past my room so I could get down the hallway to pass this man on the path? So as soon as the meditation was over, I ran around this door and caught him outside. I went back to his car. And I said, excuse me. I know we're not supposed to be talking here, but you have that truck. Do you by chance have an electric car charger? He says, well, I don't, but I think there might be one in the barn down there, 40 feet from my car, maybe 25 feet. It's been there all week. He said, let's go down and see. And I said, I know we're not talking. He said, let's wait till we get down the path and then we can talk. Isn't that gentle? And so this man was just love. And when we got past the boundary line, he said, hi, I'm Christopher. And I said, I'm Sean. And we went in the garage, the barn there. He said, I used to do maintenance here. And he said, oh, there's the charger. He said, now let's see if we have extension cords. Sure enough, we found two. We went over to my car, and he lifted up the hood. And I had read enough at that point from a thing David sent me on how to charge a car. And we found the right places to put the clamps. Boom, started right up. Isn't that nice? Mm-hmm. Isn't that just lovely? And then I ran it for 15 minutes and went back in for the next meditation. Came back out and it died. You need to let it run longer. But I knew how to hook this thing up by myself at this point. And I did. And then I went inside. And I found the course manager and I said, thank you, but I'm leaving. He said, oh, no, no. I said, oh, yes, yes. He said, well, will you talk to the teacher? I said, sure. Not my car is out there still running in the driveway because I wasn't going to turn it off. And he said, you're determined to go. I said, my stuff's packed. The room is cleaned. Everything's done. But I saw in this life of made-up fear, of catastrophizing a made-up future, I was loved. Not for my personality, not because I'm wonderful, not because I'm special, but because I was willing to be. How do I know I was willing to be? Because that's what I saw in front of me. Because I was afraid to ask this guy. I thought, oh, don't ask him, you'll sound stupid. And I thought, you're going to let an opportunity pass you by for help. Because the worst that could have come was him to say, oh, sorry, I can't help you. And then I'd have to wait till the course manager got around it or call AAA. But I thought, things have just played out too specifically. And if we pay attention, clearly all of life's circumstances are not going to be what we wish they were. They're especially, for many of us, not going to be what we wish they had been. But if we pay attention, we can see how they are playing out now in our favor. My childhood, I don't know if I told you, everyone I've ever met has comes to visit me during this. Thank you all. So many of you came to say hello to me as I was sitting in that meditation hall. And I thanked every one of you. And my teachers, Miss Karabi from third grade, so many people. They can just because I got time on my hands. And it's easy to get lost during the meditation. And so to look at them and not judge them, observe them. Say, oh, how lovely. That actually is judging them. But I became grateful. And during the week, I became grateful for that car giving me this experience with my mind. Because we all have a mind that works differently. We're not all of the same mind. But we are all of the same source without being of the same understanding of the source. And so, I've had to do this 7 times so far. I don't know if I'll ever do it again. I'm not committed to doing that. I was shocked. It was 3 weeks ago. I heard the voice that said, go do it. It's like, well, no, I just did it last year. No, it's too soon. No, they'll be not sold out, but full. Because these things fill up normally to get into the September one. I would have had to have signed up in March. And I went online, and I saw waiting lists for men, but applications being accepted. And it was a combination of English and Vietnamese. And I thought, well, fill out the application. They're probably not going to get you. And doggone it, I thought Tuesday a week ago, we'd like to accept your application. And I said to David, he said, Vipassana, isn't it? And I said, yes. So I went to my storage bin and I got all my stuff to make myself comfortable as I can while doing Vipassana in my room and stuff. And this talk is called After the Silence. After the silence is when you see the results of silence. And some people think they can't meditate because they're thinking too much. I don't know if anybody thought more than I did while I was there. And every single time, I think all over the place, and I have moments of silence. Just moments of silence. And that's all it takes to witness a shift, a change. So yesterday, I got home yesterday afternoon, parked the car, unpacked, and as everyone does, I went to our pool. In our new apartment, we have a pool out back, and it was nice weather, and I thought, go lay in the sun for a minute. And as I was there, one of our neighbors came down, and she said, I don't want to keep you, I know you just got back. And I said, yeah, and she said, did anything come up? And I told her about the be here now. And I told her about now is not then. And here is not there. This morning she wrote to me and said, I can't thank you enough for that. I so needed to hear those thoughts at this time of my life. Because there's total wisdom in it and total opportunity for acceptance. And I am so grateful that I could be in the time and place to hear those words from the voice within me. So I knew what Eric was going to be singing there. It's good to be alive. And I want to feel like it's good to be alive, don't you? Rather than, no, something, oh, life is wonderful. And you don't believe that for a minute. Look how you treat yourself. Look how you talk to yourself. Look what you think of your neighbor. Look what you'd say to your body and your face when you look in the mirror, some of us. Look what you think when you think of your parents, some of us. When you think of your teachers from high school and grade school, when you think of money, when you think of the streets of New York, when you think of what you don't agree with, that it's not your place to agree or disagree with, and the things we tell ourselves. You know, I am thrilled. I dropped 9 pounds. It doesn't make me special. If it did, I'd be fat shaming, as I say. But it's hard on the knees. But it's mostly because the HP, and you eat so little. But I was so relieved. But I don't look in the mirror and think, oh, my goodness, now, why aren't I svelte? Now I can go out and be objectified in the streets. The only reason I want to be thin anymore is because it's more comfortable. It's more comfortable in your body to be that. But to satisfy my ego, I don't need that so much anymore. I got somebody who loves me and is very attracted to me. Have you met him? You really should. And so I get to share this story with Unity of New York and those in TV land. Is it recording today?
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful. See, things are working the way I want them to today. And if they didn't, that would be my next thing. One last thing here. Impermanence. They talk about how life is impermanent. Everything keeps changing. Our bodies change, Lord knows. So I always like to say, is anybody here the same size they were when they were born? No, and if they were, yeah, I know, your poor mothers, if they weren't. But we don't think the same. We are different here than we were walking up the street to come in here. Things have changed. The molecules have changed. The ideas have changed. You know, hearing this talk, you've changed your mind about certain things. Hearing Eric sing, you've changed your mind about certain things. And you're going to get an opportunity in a second to hear him sing again and change your mind about things. And so to pay attention to all of that, realize, oh, I don't have to commit to the past. I just want to be present for the present. And present for the presence. We never have to ask God for another thing. We just have to accept the gifts that have already been given. So David wrote this next song. And I forget who the group he wrote it for.
Anti-Gravity.
Oh, I remembered. Oh, I heard the voice. And it's, let yourself be elevated in your thinking and your remembering. Here is not there, and now is not then. Thank you. All right. I have gazed into the night and looked up at the stars and wondered if there might be life out there on Mars. Don't know if I can get there, but I sure would like to try. Let me dream, let me dare, let me fly. Break the surly bonds of this gravity. I know that the fear that has been holding me, finally let me go. Let me see my dreams come true, not just stand here standing by. Let me soar, let me through, let me fly. Let me fly beyond the sky into outer space.
Let me look back at the earth and see a different place. From out there, I'll see no borders, no enemies, no war. And when I've returned, maybe I'll have learned what we're all living for. And I know the chance I take by taking to the sky, but the difference that I make will be the reason why. So even if I fail, even if I die, I'll have no regret. The challenge has been met. The world will not forget.